It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. Got a great panel for you. Father Robert Ballas here, Jason Heiner, and Jerry Pournelle join us to preview Google I.O., to talk about the Fire Phone, Amazon's new smartphone, and a new bill in Congress to save net neutrality. It's all coming up next on TWiT. Go!
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 463, recorded June 22nd, 2014. All the pretty things. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Citrix GoToMeeting, the powerfully simple way to meet with coworkers and clients anywhere. Share the same screen and see each other face-to-face with HD video conferencing. Even present from an iPad. Start your 30-day free trial of GoToMeeting today. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and use the promo code TWIT. And by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. For my special offer, go to Stamps.com, click the microphone, and enter TWIT. That's Stamps.com, offer code TWIT. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free 2-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TWIT. And by Carbonite. Whether you have one computer at home or several at your small business, Carbonite backs up your files to the cloud automatically and continually. Plus, access your files anytime, anywhere with a free app. Start your free trial at Carbonite.com. No credit card required. Use the offer code TWIT and get 2 bonus months with purchase. It's time for TWIT This Week in Tech, the show where we talk about the week's tech news. And we've got a great panel, and we also have a box of tissues because Father Robert Ballaser is here. And we may be watching the U.S. lose at soccer. We don't know. But in case, it'll either be tears of sadness or tears of joy.
I live in hope.
Father Robert is the host of This Week in Enterprise Tech and Coding 101 and Know How. He's one of the busiest guys in the network. And it's so nice to have you here for This Week in Tech. You'll be hosting in 2 weeks.
Yes, I will be.
Surprise.
Very much looking forward to that.
Can't wait. I'm going to be in Hawaii in a couple of weeks. Also,
wait a second. The U.S. is playing in soccer right now?
Jason Heiner is going to stay right there. Do not move. CBS Interactive, Tech Republic. You know, this was a very hard panel to put together because, as it turns out, apparently the World Cup is going on right now.
It's kind of a big deal.
And the United States is playing Portugal as we speak. But we'll give you play-by-play every once in a while. If I leap up and say goal and yell goal, that's why I'm hoarse. I've been practicing all day.
I thought you were playing your vuvuzela.
Bring me the vuvuzela.
Which, thank goodness, they banned.
They banned in Brazil.
That's why. Start doing the airplane. Like, every time there's a goal, you just start doing the airplane.
Oh. Also with us, it's so good to have him back, Jerry Pournelle. A longtime columnist at Byte Magazine, Chaos Manor. He still writes on the web, jerrypournelle.com. And, of course, you might be familiar with a few science fiction novels he's written over the years. It's great to have you, Jerry. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Just back from Hilton Head Island, where I guess you were at a nanotech conference?
The 30th anniversary of the conference. I think the formal name of it is sensors, activators, and probes or something of the sort.
I'm going to the probe conference.
It started before nanotech was a word one used, and most of what they were working in those days was microns, which, as far as I'm concerned, a micron's pretty damn small to begin with.
This is I'm going to read the official title, the Solid State Sensors, Actuators, and Microsystems Workshop.
Yes. And that was the 30th anniversary of it. And this one, in 1994, the conference theme was what will happen when sensors, microsystem actuators, and sensors take over the world. And in 2014, it was, well, we've kind of taken over the world. Where do we go from here? Which is where they invited a science fiction writer, namely me.
Oh, how cool. So I'm familiar with MEMS, microelectric mechanical systems, and these are not quite nanotech. These are kind of microtech.
Some of it is nanotech. Some of it is not. They're, some of the people, the probe people, and some of the others are actually down in nanometers. Most of it is in microns.
Right.
Which is still pretty small.
Yeah, I'm not. A millionth of a meter is tiny.
It's a millionth of a meter, it's and tiny. The yeah. nanotech is a billionth. And to get some picture of it, a tenth of a nanometer is an angstrom unit. So...
No, I think it was Dvorak.
Ten angstroms is a nanometer. So that gives, and atoms are typically about 10 angstroms across.
Right.
So
your atomic scale. I think it was Dvorak who schooled me in MEMS and said, you know, they're in everything now. Scales everywhere.
Everywhere. Yeah. You're right. And they are doing them, and they're very small. And it's amazing what, I mean, they were showing stuff that you wouldn't believe could be done, only they're doing it with little bitty stuff that turns out to be not very hard to fabricate. So do you want your TV screen lithographed on your arm?
I guess you could do that now. Huh? That's how we'll get flexible screens.
They're approaching it, of being able to do a flexible screen with lithography, and, you know, you have it lithographed on your arm if you want to.
So what was there anything there that surprised you?
A lot of stuff, but understand this is practical stuff. This is stuff that's working. They're making products out of it. They're selling them, as opposed to the things that if you go to one of Kurzweil's conferences, it's all going to be things that are happening 20 years from now.
A lot of blue sky.
Maybe.
Yeah.
And maybe they won't.
Yeah.
That's always bothered me when you have these conversations about nanotech. There seems to be a lot of sci-fi with all due regard to you, Jerry. A lot of stuff like, in the future, we'll be able, there'll be gray goo and things.
That is the attitude of this conference towards that picture.
The gray goo conference? No. I'm not going to that.
For the last 30 years... commercial fusion power was going to be online in 30 years. And every year,
next year.
30 years from now.
Next year.
And it's still 30 years from now.
Yeah.
Best I can see. Yeah. This is stuff you can buy today. There is a kid there who's got a gizmo that you attach to your computer with a serial cable. It's got a stage on it. You can then do electron microscopy. And he'll sell it for under, they're hoping to sell it for under $100.
Wow. So our eighth grade class will have an electron microscope.
It'll have an electron microscope. There's another gizmo you attach to your telephone. And it's got a little spring and a needle in it. You put your finger in the cup and you twist it and bong and doink, it stabs you and draws a drop of blood.
I have a question. What's a telephone?
The phone is good enough to do a complete blood sugar analysis for diabetics.
That's cool.
But it does more than that. It looks at ketones, it looks at various other things, and if it thinks it needs to, it telephones your doctor.
So you have
that's app
interesting.
That you can buy for under $100, or at least they hope to be able to sell that shortly for under $100. And there's venture capitalists putting money into the company. So,
you know, at CES we saw a company that I think it was Digital Experience. They were showing off what looked like a tricorder. Obviously, they used the inspiration from Star Trek to create a device that they were doing a Kickstarter for. And they said, well, we've developed technology that will allow you to. Hold it next to the skin, and you can find everything from blood sugar to pulse rate to oxygen saturation. And some of it sounded very plausible, but then they were starting to say, and it scans for your blood for pathogens. And I started thinking, I think maybe you're heading a little bit too far into the sci-fi. That sort of technology, although it's very cool, I don't think we're anywhere near yet. The ability to wave a wand over someone's skin and be able to tell all that sort of information simply by shining infrared light doesn't seem really
by shining infrared light, but by ultrasound you can do a lot of things, and that is getting down to becoming an app on your cell phone.
Well, it feels like we're headed that way with Apple announcing HealthKit and the Health app. And I think this week Google I.O., we're going to see Google Android Wear. There's rumors that LG and others will show Google watches, Google Android Wear-based watches that will have some health aspect. But I'm actually really glad Jerry's here because I have a question. You mentioned Kickstarter. And this has been going on Kickstarter. It's a Kickstarter project. And I just want to ask you, Jerry, because I know you have enough background to answer this question, former professor of engineering and an expert on this kind of stuff. It's called iFind, the world's first battery-free item locating tag. They were looking for $25,000. They still have a week to go. They've raised $500,000. And I think there's significant question of whether this is, in fact, a scam. Kickstarter is not responding to a lot of people, if you watch the comments, who claim there's no way this could work. Now, you tell me, Jerry, it's Bluetooth. It says it doesn't need a battery. They say they get, now this is the thing that worries me. They say it recycles electromagnetic energy and stores it in a unique power bank so you don't have to have batteries for this Bluetooth design. Now, I've heard of RFID, that doesn't need power.
RFID kind of
does that. Bluetooth is a radio transmitter.
Yeah.
Jerry, does this seem possible?
Well, if it doesn't need, it's like RFID, it doesn't have to have a battery if you were coming around with some kind of gizmo that powers it. But you understand a gadget that does recording of what's going on without having to have a battery in it is every spook's dream.
It's a perpetual motion machine is what it is.
Well, but I mean, every intelligence officer in the world wants one of those and would be willing to pay an awful lot for it because the batteries run out. You bug the guy's office, that's fine, but unless you can connect it to his telephone, you have no power source, and the batteries run out after a while, which is, by the way, why there is no telephone in any clean room, and if you go to a meeting at the agency, they make you leave your cell phone outside.
Well, You
might be onto something. Maybe this is a CIA budget cut thing. This is like one department of the CIA that's running a little
So the CIA is kickstarting their spying now?
It just doesn't seem... Now, if it is really...
It doesn't seem right to
If it's really
either,
Bluetooth, but it's got to have a battery. If it's RFID, I understand it doesn't have to have a battery, but it wouldn't be much use because you'd have to track something.
Yeah.
You'd have to be standing on top of it.
Well, they claim a 60-meter range, so that even puts it beyond the range of Bluetooth.
I think this is bogus.
This is higher power Bluetooth.
If you read the comments, a lot of people have asked questions. The company has not responded very well or thoroughly, and yet Kickstarter has not pulled this down. The Kickstarter approved it, I presume, although I gather that they're not quite as careful now as they are about screening Kickstarter projects. And then, you know, Kickstarter did remember say, well, you have to have a physical prototype. There's no prototype. And they want you to do a fairly complete risks and challenges. If you read in the risks and challenges page, it says the main risks are reliance on outside sources within the supply chain. The contractor has to order components from other vendors. If these vendors slip, the complete production's at risk. It seems like there's more risks than that. Like, it's a physical impossibility.
I could build you a gizmo that used, I think it would be illegal to do it, but used Bluetooth frequencies that worked out to 50 or 60, that were powerful enough to activate an RFID Bluetooth receiver at 60 meters.
Is there enough energy?
It would be legal to do that.
Is there enough electromagnetic energy in the air so that I wouldn't need a battery? I could just collect what was the book where it had the little fingers?
Sunstones.
Yeah, they would collect power from.
And that was Tesla's dream. You were going to be able to do it, but the problem is that the inverse square law kind of ruins you. Actually, it's inverse cube when you're broadcasting power.
The farther away you get, the amount of power you get decreases by the inverse of the cube. It's a huge
I think this is possible. I mean, so if we give these guys the benefit of the doubt and we say, okay, they say they've got patent pending technology, we give them the benefit of the doubt and assume that this actually does work. It would be quite a breakthrough ultimately. But I think we have to assume that this is pretty untested. You know, nobody else that we know of is using this kind of thing or has successfully productized this kind of thing. And so even if it does work, if we assume that it does work, I think we have to, you know, also assume that this is, you know, something that's going to have some hiccups and that, you know, is going to be untested.
You are way too kind, Jason. When they say patent pending, they mean, you know, we got it. I got the patent right here. I'm just going to, next time I go down that way, I'll file it.
I'll file that.
Yeah. They say it uses our patent pending EM harvesting technology. I can't wait to see that. That's
sure.
Going to change the world.
That sure sounds, yeah, that's Tesla's dream. And there have been a lot of people trying to do what Tesla claimed he knew how to do but never did. So who knows?
Yeah. Well,
but I don't think so.
These guys?
I
mean,
people, you know, I should really pursue this more. Pando Daily's been spending a lot of time on this. My point is you have 7 days. If you did give them money, you have 7 days to take it back. Because in 7 days, they're going to cash the check, in effect. The Kickstarter will get funded, and that money will be withdrawn. And at that point, you have no recourse, even if you never see anything. Although Kickstarter, I think, has some mechanism for getting your money back. I don't know how well that works.
Yeah, I might have somebody call these guys, actually, on Monday.
Would you get tomorrow. On that? Would you get? It's called WeTag. It's on Kickstarter. Yep. iFind is the device. They've raised $500,000.
And the problem
staggering.
Is that if you've got a gadget that will do that, I can think of so many things that are more
than a key finder.
To do.
Yeah. You could power my car.
That may just be from my old background, but I can think of lots of things I would love to be able to do with a gadget that can do that.
Well, we're talking about a ridiculously low amount of power. I mean,
how low can Bluetooth go?
They're calling it Bluetooth light. They're not called Bluetooth
LE.
Like.
It's LE. Well, they don't say it's Bluetooth. It's Bluetooth like.
Bluetooth like. So, I mean, you could get it down into, you know, technically maybe 5.1 milliamp, somewhere in that vicinity. But you're still going to need a lot of power. And so you're going to have to beam energy straight at this device in order to give it enough juice to run on its special reservoir of power.
We will watch with interest. Jason, get your Tech Republic news hounds on that one.
Yeah, we'll dig on. We'll try to get a hold of them. See what they tell us.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Amazon had a big party in which they announced a new phone. Interesting, because we'd heard a lot about the phone, but when we found out the details, there was a lot of stuff we hadn't heard about yet. And one of the rumors that proved only to be semi-true was the notion this was a 3D phone. Not exactly. It's dynamic perspective. We'll talk about that and more. Jerry Pournelle is here from jerrypournelle.com, my hero, my inspiration, and a great to be able to call him a friend. Also with us, Jason Heiner from Tech Republic, also my hero, and Padre, Father Robert Ballester, also my hero. You're all my heroes. You're the wind beneath my something, soccer my cushion.
Ball.
But first, a word from Citrix and the folks who do Go To Meeting. If you are in business, you know that getting people together to hash out differences, to brainstorm, to plan is so important. But nowadays, with businesses spread out all over the world, it's hard to get people together so that you can communicate. If you're pitching clients, they could be in, you know, in Louisville, and we could be in Petaluma.
Yes.
How are we going to make that work? How can we make that work? Go to meeting. Go to meeting. Yeah, it's the most efficient way to meet with clients and customers right from your computer or your smartphone or your tablet. You can meet. One nice thing about GoToMeeting is you pay once a month a flat rate. You don't have to count the minutes of the meetings. That means you can have it on all day if your team is spread out. You can meet as often as you like with anyone anywhere in the world. GoToMeeting lets you share screens so you can review documents. I've actually used it to rehearse presentations in real time. You can also use the built-in HD video conferencing. So just like Jason and I, we could see each other face-to-face as we're looking at those screens. Cut out the wasted time and expensive travel without losing the personal touch of meeting in person. And you can do it right now with GoToMeeting. We use it for every one of the meetings we do, even if it's just a conference call, because it makes it so much easier if you want to fire up the camera or you want to fire up the screen sharing. GoToMeeting.com. Try it free for 30 days. Just click the try it free button at GoToMeeting.com and use the promo code TWIT, and you got 30 days free. GoToMeeting. We thank the folks at Citrix who have been such great supporters of the network practically since day one. So we knew when we went to the Amazon or watched the Amazon event, they didn't stream it, which frustrated me. Did you send anybody, Jason?
We had Larry Dignan there.
Oh, Larry.
Larry Dignan.
Love Larry. Yeah.
Yep. was there.
It was a small group, about the auditorium at the Fremont Theater in Seattle. I've seen differing reports, but it's hundreds of people, not thousands. Amazon said that several hundred people were there because they had from the public. Because you remember on the front page at Amazon.com, they said, would you like to come to the event, post a video or ask for an invitation? And several hundred of the, I think they said 60,000 people who applied got invitations. There were about 200 press there. And Jeff Bezos did the whole thing, 90 minutes on stage, showing off Amazon's first phone, the Fire Phone, a phone that Bezos said later they'd been working on for 4 years. That explains the rumors we've been hearing for 4 years that Amazon would do a phone. One of the things everybody thought maybe Amazon would do with a phone is offer it for free as part of a Prime subscription or make it really low cost. None of that happened. It's not, in fact, cheaper than any other phone. It is not carrier free. It requires AT&T in the U.S., $200 with a 2-year contract, $650 unsubsidized for the 32 gig version, $750 for the 64 gig version. And it's a pretty, I mean, if you look at it, it seems like a fairly typical high end smartphone running a version of Android that Amazon calls Fire OS 3.5. And that was one thing I think that one of my takeaways is there is now a fourth mobile OS along with Android and iOS and Microsoft's Windows Phone. I guess it could be fifth if you include BlackBerry. This, you know, this fork of Android is really a new mobile OS. I think that this is differentiated enough. It doesn't use Google services. The maps come from Nokia's Here division, their Here maps. The store is Amazon's own store, 250,000 apps in that store. Unfortunately, most designed for the Amazon tablets. I don't know how many will work well on the phone. Without Google services, it's not an Android phone. Jason, is Fire OS really a fully qualified operating system in its own right?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's good enough. I think that it's good enough to call it its own thing and not an Android fork now. I guess the thing that... The only thing that this phone really innovates is it's a shopper's phone, right? And they do some innovative things with the
Firefly feature.
With Firefly, exactly. Yeah. That's the crux of the story. I think for me is they're innovating with shopping. I don't know that they can get people to buy on that. I think that's a great feature. I don't know that that's a feature that somebody's going to buy on or somebody's going to switch. I think the 3D interface stuff is pretty gimmicky, and I don't think, and is potentially going to be even sort of confusing and not necessarily fantastic user experience.
Did Larry get to play with it at all?
Yeah, so we have some hands on over on ZDNet. We've got some hands on.
He said it was very. The Firefly was surprisingly accurate. That it picked up a lot of the things he pointed it at.
Yeah,
It's not just stuff you buy. It's paintings. It's
music, movies.
You could show it at a TV screen and it'll know what you're watching.
And that's why I think Jason's right in that there's nothing in this phone that's going to cause people to switch. If you're a phone guy, if you're a geek,
well, see, that's the question.
If you're looking for the hardware, this isn't it.
Microsoft is so late to the party and they're struggling with what is, I would say, a very good operating system, Windows Phone 8.1, or it will soon to be 8.1. And it's hard just because they're a couple of years late and everybody's either invested in Android or iOS. It does feel like Amazon has at least paved the way better. They've been building this app store. Is it enough?
It is in this sense. Bezos specifically said in his address that they wanted to build a phone for their most engaged customers. I mean, he tells
everyone. It's Amazon Prime users.
It's not a cheat. Mm-hmm. He's saying, look. If you're just looking for the best phone out there, this is probably not it, because we don't care about the people who are looking for phones. We want the person who buys so much from Amazon, media and products and movies, entertainment, everything, that it makes sense for them to have Amazon in their pocket. And it's what they've been doing with their tablets. I mean, you look at their tablets and they're decent devices, nice screens, decent specs. But people have always said, well, why would I buy that when I could buy a Nexus? Why would I buy that when I could buy a better Android tablet? And the reason is because you've bought into Amazon. And people will say, well, is that enough? And Bezos would say, yeah, there is. There's enough people who just like Amazon that they'll buy this phone. And Amazon can take a loss on every phone as long as they get more people buying into the Amazon ecosystem.
Bill in Michigan in our chat room says the only thing worse than a phone from an advertising company, Google, is a phone from a retailer. Amazon.
I mean, I think Robert's right that they aim this at the Amazon customers, the Amazon ecosystom. And a couple
you get $100 off if you're a Prime customer.
Yep.
Then it's less than an iPhone.
Yeah,
it's
and free. Worse for home. I mean, Bezos is absolutely right. Remember how for years and years we had this joke? I used to have it in my column. Next year, Amazon will make a profit. And it went on for years.
Yeah.
And we laughed like hell. And suddenly they not only made profits, they made them in spades with big casino.
You got to admire a guy who's willing to not take a profit for 10 years in order to build the fulfillment centers. I mean, he controls the dials at any
and
point. Amazon
wanted, exactly. He wanted exactly that. He wanted a group of people who, when he comes up with a telephone, they're going to say, yeah.
Well, he got him.
Wait, there's something here. Do you
and
remember
in
when?
In fact, they should. Those are the kinds of people who ought to have that phone.
Exactly. That's the Amazon crowd. Do you remember when you first started buying Amazon? You bought it on Amazon because it was cheaper. You found the thing that was cheaper, and that's why you went to Amazon.com. Now, I buy everything we use for shows here. I buy from Amazon.
Who here
but
is Amazon?
It was cheaper.
Who here is Amazon Prime? I'm Amazon Prime. Uh-huh. You're Amazon. Jason, are you Amazon Prime? Jerry, yes. Are you Amazon Prime?
Yeah.
Everybody sure. in the audience, everybody. So you know what?
He how said, many in the audience? Yeah,
pretty much tell everybody. Us. He said.
Okay.
Jeff said tens of millions. They've never said how many Amazon Prime members there are. So we know there's 20 million or maybe more, but at least 20 million. It's a small group, and yet every geek in this room is a member. Because it's addictive, isn't it? And we don't care about the price anymore.
Not anymore.
I don't do price comparison. I'm going to get it in 2 days.
And you know what? If the shipping doesn't say Prime, I won't I'll look
too.
At the product that's $10 more expensive.
They get that little checkbox that says it's available under Prime, and you check that box.
I'm a sucker.
But they're going to have our time converting us, you know, to
but we're
to
not going to buy the phone, exactly.
No. So I think this is I do think this is strategically a missed opportunity for them. Because I think what they could have done and probably should have done was they should have basically sold a phone, you know, whatever, less hardware, quit messing with the sort of 3D goofy thing, and you know, sold a phone for $350 off contract or $50 on contract, whatever. It includes Prime with it, and then they give you this very simple value proposition: when you get our phone, you get Prime with it. You get not only you get these benefits of, you know, free shipping on your Amazon stuff, but you get free music streaming, you get free videos. You can get rid of these subscriptions that you have to these services and save you money. And, you know, we'll give you free storage.
That's tough to do. For instance, Amazon has launched a Prime streaming music service, but they only have 1 million songs. It's hard for them to make the deals that Apple and Amazon
I've already added
Google
all
make.
A million to my playlist. So.
but it's still...
It's nothing
true.
You want.
But it's a good value prop. It's a very simple value proposition to a user and say, when you get our phone, you also get all these services for free instead of having to pay $10 here and $10 there and $7.99 here and for all these things and get nickel and dime. You get our phone, you get all the ecosystem with it, and it's free.
But couldn't they still do that? Do you remember when they released the Kindle and they made a surprise for Kindle Prime users, the best customers, they gave free Kindles. What if they seeded the market with 1 million of these phones to their best Prime users? People start seeing, oh, wow, they can get their stuff much better. They go to a retail store and they whip out their phone. It tells them the price of everything and they just hit buy. It's they could still, if the sales aren't high enough, use that model. And that's actually what I like about this.
Because you think they might turn that on?
They could. It's because it's their platform, they have the option.
Yeah.
They do have the eyeballs can. Also. So the other thing with that, kind of what you're getting at, Robert, I think this is what they should have led with and not what they have led with instead, you know, in their announcement is something stronger like this. But they also have the advantage of all these eyeballs that come to Amazon.com every day and they can promote this phone to them. And we also shouldn't underestimate that because the value of that is something that Apple has to pay a lot of money for. Is it something that, you know, Google has to pay a lot of money for? Obviously, Google can do it a little bit, but, you know, slapping a Nexus sort of text ad on Google Pages is one thing. You know, being able to put a flashy, you know, our phone for this much if they discount it or start giving them away or whatever on an Amazon page or on an Amazon checkout is something that is super valuable.
I hear that argument a lot, but I don't think it's pushed the Fire TV to the top of the heap or the Kindle Fire HDX to the top of the heap. I mean, I think they're probably selling okay. We don't know because Amazon doesn't break those sales figures out. And, you know, there's an interesting irony with the Fire Phone that Prime users, it's I guess its best target are the most among the most sophisticated internet users, I would think. And yet, one of the features on this phone that I think makes it very appealing to first-time smartphone buyers is the Mayday button. I mean, I think if my mom or somebody who's never owned a smartphone came to me and said, which smartphone should I get? If they shop on Amazon, and it, I would say get the Amazon phone because of the Mayday button. Mm-hmm. That's a different audience. That's not the prime audience.
So if they had that audience, again, if they went with sort of a lower priced phone and were targeting more of these entry level users,
can they do
they
that?
Can basically convert people to Amazon Prime users. Then, then if, say, at some point they get rid of their Amazon phone, they don't have it anymore, and all of a sudden they don't have free shipping anymore, well, all of a sudden they're kind of addicted to it, right? They're like, this is a great service. I don't have free movies. I don't have, you know, free shipping on my Amazon stuff. And now they're hooked in. I think they should have used it that way because I think they're going to have a much harder time converting, you know, technophiles and, you know, phone lovers and people who are already using Prime to buy this device and to go over to their ecosystem rather than when you can do all this stuff on your iPhone or your Android phone already.
Are you at all convinced that that's the group that Bezos is after? I think he's got a good portion of the geek community as big as he's going to get. Most of them are not that happy with Amazon for other reasons anyway. What he is after, I think, are people like my wife and your mother, people who shop on Amazon and who don't really know much about smartphones and don't care much about them. And here's an easy way to do it. And that panic button is a wonderful idea.
It really works, too.
I caution you to remember this is Jeff Bezos. This is the guy who built from what started out everybody thought was kind of a joke into an enormous company with huge resources that's essentially going to put Walmart out of business if it keeps it up.
This is not a man
who did not consider all the questions you are asking.
Well, I agree with you. I just think that their pitch hasn't been clear enough that that's who they're after. And if they are after that crowd, and I guess we'll see. There's still time, right? They just launched the thing. But it certainly wasn't clear to me that that's what they're after.
What is the strategy?
They can win.
Why does Amazon do a phone?
To innovate shopping, to innovate mobile shopping.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. The question there then is how long before we start seeing Firefly offered on Android devices? How long before they port that service to other mobile devices?
Amazon has an SDK, so if you're Best Buy and you're worried that people are going to use... By the way, this is kind of cool because there's a dedicated Firefly button on the phone. Firefly launches within 1 second, and you can take a picture of anything. And then as the phone ships, it'll show you how to buy it on Amazon. But there's nothing to stop Best Buy from creating an app that says, press the Firefly button, and here's how much it is on Best Buy.
Why not? Yeah.
Maybe they did that on purpose so that Best Buy can't sue them for... I mean, because it really is the ideal showrooming thing. I like this Mayday button. Let me read you some stats. This comes from Amazon's financial filing. I think they're 10K that they filed recently. The average response time on the Mayday button, 9.75 seconds. He promised under 15. He means it. That's fast. 75. They must have a huge customer service team to do this. Think of the cost of that. 75% of the questions from Kindle Fire customers come in through Mayday. That's the first device that Mayday supported. Questions from all around the world, including Australia, Bolivia, Egypt, Kenya, Santa Lucia, and Venezuela. But what's really interesting is what they support. So these are some of the things Bezos shared in the press release about how customers have been using Mayday over the first 8 months. This is before the Fire phone. After being stuck on a specific Angry Birds level for a week, somebody pressed the Mayday button, and a tech advisor helped the customer beat the level. A group of friends were trying to figure out how to make a perfect peanut butter and jelly sandwich. They asked the Mayday advisor to judge which approach was the best. I don't know what the choices are.
Oh, no, I want it. Just
peanut butter first or jelly first? Peanut butter on the outside? Not a non-starter. Tech advisor sang happy birthday to somebody as they were receiving a Fire HDX from their boyfriend. He pressed the button and said, okay, I'm going to give it to her right now. Sing happy birthday. And he did. They did. Customers have asked tech advisors to draw things. Because, you know, they have the ability to then manipulate the screen, including happy faces, rainbows, unicorns, fire-breathing dragons, and aliens. They have received, I think, 35 marriage proposals. A lot of people ask for the woman who was in the ad, who is not, in fact, a Mayday advisor.
Some people in the chat room are making fun of this, but that's a lot more fun than Siri.
Yeah, Siri won't help you with Angry Birds.
I would press the Mayday button and say, can you give my homily for me? I'm just going to put you up on the mic. I couldn't think of anything last night.
I need something for the sermon. A Bible verse, anyone. Just pick a Bible verse. I think that's, this is good marketing. I mean, I don't know. I think it actually is probably the first new way of helping people use technology that actually works.
I mean, visual search, maybe it there's an innovation here going on with visual search just in general. Sorry, I know that's different than the Mayday button, but I'm going back to Firefly.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I derailed Firefly. Go ahead.
Sorry, but Firefly, I mean, I think that there...
Firefly is probably more significant than Mayday. I'll grant you that.
Yeah, I think the visual search bit of this, you know, could be pretty significant. If it's the beginning of visual search, then that's a great thing, and that's a great innovation. I
challenge Amazon to turn on face recognition.
Ooh.
Ooh. Ooh. See, you guys, nobody wants this, but everybody wants this. And you're thinking about stalkers going, hey, she's cute. What's her name and home address? But wouldn't it be great when you're walking up to somebody, I know this guy. Why do I know him? You take him surreptitiously. You push the... It goes, that's your friend Jerry Pournelle. You've been on Twitter 23 times. Oh, hi, Jerry. Wouldn't you want that, Jerry?
I would want it. I would want no one else around me to have it.
Very
is
good.
That fair? Can we do that?
Very good.
I think, Jerry, your mic is muted. Unmute your mic.
Oh, is it working now?
Yeah, we hear you now.
Okay, I hit the button to when I was coughing. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine.
I need that face recognition,
yeah.
But then I'm 80 years old, and yeah. I've signed a hell of a lot of books in the last 40 years, and everybody I ever signed a book for and wrote a personalization in it for me expects me to know them again when I see them, which is not always going to happen. I am getting a worse memory every year. Fortunately, as bad as mine is, it's still better than Niven's was when I first met him 40 years ago. So I know I can live.
Larry has no excuse. He was a young man with bad memory.
Yeah. I need to give you one, make sure we understand one thing.
Okay.
I have a certain predilection for being favorable to Amazon for the simple reason that a significant part of my income comes from selling 40-year-old books on Amazon in the e-books.
That, by the way, is not insignificant. And it's one of the things. Where do you stand on this Amazon Hachette argument? This happened a few weeks ago. People noticed that some major Hachette books were no longer, couldn't order them on Amazon, or there was a 3 to 4 week wait, even though these books, according to Hachette, had been supplied to Amazon. It was pretty clear Amazon had decided to do a kind of a slow play on Hachette.
Are you going to tell me that bookstores never tried playing that game?
That was Amazon's defense. You can still buy it on Amazon.
But what I'm getting at is traditional publishers have played the same game. They didn't do too well at it. Amazon may do better. But I have a different view of what's going on with Amazon than some of the other. I wish Amazon had competition. Don't misunderstand me.
And they do. Here's the good news. They do. There are plenty of places you can buy books online.
I would really hate to see them become the only game in town.
Yeah.
But I will have to say, Bezos has said and said often that he wants to keep authors happy. And everything I have seen so far up to now bears out what he says. And you do understand every now and then he gets a group of science fiction writers together and flies them up to Seattle so he can have dinner with them.
Well, that's neat.
So he's kind of sympathetic to the work I do. So I start off with a prejudice in his favor. I haven't seen too many people at Fleshette do that. But
yeah.
So I'm going to give the counterpoint to that since we're still talking the story. You know, Mike Elgin published this actually great piece on Computer World today, where he called this, he called the Fire Phone the most effective device ever sold for harvesting the personal data from its owner. So this is another one of the things. And Mike, you know, who obviously you guys all know well.
He's our news director. Yeah. He said you should not buy the Fire Phone.
He did. Yeah. He did. And so so just to you know, bring some balance here, you know, Mike's point is that, you know, every time you do Firefly, you know, every time you use Firefly, it's uploading, you know, images, audio, and GPS coordinates every time. And that Amazon is storing that data. And that also because they're looking at through this 3D feature, they're looking at your face, you know, all the time to judge, you know, if you're looking at, you know, your facial angles and things like this. They're going to be able to do this amazing thing that we just talked about, and that the facial recognition potentially, because of all the data they're collecting on that, could be better than you know, anybody has done before, because of that database of sort of facial images, if they were in fact, you know, storing those and connecting them to a profile on you. So, Mike's just making a pretty strong argument. Then he's bringing in sort of the cloud storage and Silk browser and other things. And he's saying that this thing is going to have so much data on you, you know, Google and Facebook will be jealous, you know, in terms of what they're going to have because of some of these features.
But yeah. Isn't that inevitable?
But is it? I mean, it is inevitable in the sense that this is where all these services are heading. But we have such a freak out as a collective society. Anytime we think our privacy is being invaded, which is interesting, because with all of this information being collected by not just this device, but Amazon's entire existence, why there hasn't been a complete freak out over what Amazon does with big data. Jason,
partly because we've been living with Google for so long, right?
Yeah.
True.
Yep. What is it they're doing that Google doesn't do now?
Well, it is inevitable.
Mike's point, though, is that this phone is even better than any other Android phone for doing this because of Firefly and because it has four cameras on the front face. So it's seeing you, it's seeing where you are, in other words, it's an even better data collector. But they're not doing anything different than Google's
doing.
No,
but Google has been, to Google's credit, they have been getting more and more transparent yeah. about what they're doing.
And that's Mike's complaint, yeah.
And Mike's point, and I think he's right on, is that, you know, Amazon is not, they need to be far more transparent and detailed about what they are collecting, what they are saving, and what their practices are on anonymizing the things or allowing you to opt out and those kind of things, which they currently do not. And if they're going to do these kind of things, they have to do it, and we should hold their feet to the fire.
But do they? Do they? Because Google sells you. You're Google's product. You're the thing that the data point that they are offering to their advertisers.
True.
For Amazon, mm-hmm. they're really honest. I mean, even if we don't know exactly what they're doing with it, we know the purpose. The entire purpose of Amazon's existence, of all their data collection, is to sell you stuff. That's it. And they're very open about that. I mean, they're not pretending like they're not selling you that book or that gizmo. So maybe that's why we cut them more slack. Because even if we don't know the minutia of what they're doing with that information, we know the final product.
I think as internet citizens, though, our expectation is becoming and should be that if you are using my data, if you are taking data on me, that you should be transparent about that. You should let me know that, especially on the scale of what places like Google and Facebook and Amazon and Apple are doing. And so that I think that is a fair point. And it's not something that's out there. It's not something that should be mandated by law, but I think it should be an expectation. And I think it's something that as journalists, it's something that we can do to sort of hold people's feet to the fire on it.
Jason, do you use your CVS membership card or your Vons or Safeway or Ralph's grocery store cards to get that little discount they give for being a member?
Sometimes, some of them I do.
I buy everything from Sharper
Image.
And so
they know everything you've bought and how much it cost and when you bought it and where you bought it. Do you think that Walmart doesn't have cameras that see your face while you're buying stuff?
But should we accept that, Jerry? I mean,
It's a little late to not accept it, isn't it?
That's kind of, by the way, that's kind of Mike's point. He said, and see, we've never had to think about Amazon in that regard, but all of a sudden with his phone, we do. And he said, this is quoting Mike's article, one can imagine 3 years hence when users are more jaded and worn down by massive and constant privacy invasions that Amazon might choose to turn on some killer future face recognition algorithm using those pictures that they've been uploading. Remember, they're giving you free, unlimited storage for all of your photos in order to compete more effectively against other data harvesting companies. So if Amazon, and this is what he asks, he says, if Amazon doesn't promise to never do this, then they're just leaving that option open. And potential buyers, and I think this is fair, should be aware of this. You may make the choice, you may do the deal with the devil, if you'll forgive me, Father, but you should understand that Amazon has this potential, and if they don't promise never to do it, then we can assume they might.
Yeah, and I am playing devil's advocate here, Jerry, but still, I'm just saying that this is reaching a level, you know, where it's getting so far, you know, down the tracks on some of these things, and I just think before it gets too far down the tracks, where you know consumers have completely no. And you know, the regular folks have no awareness of this, and it could be used, you know, against them in ways that, you know, they don't appreciate, that, you know, it's part of our job to advocate on their behalf.
Amazon has a browser, of course, in the Fire, the Silk browser. And he points out, Mike, again, we should have had Mike on the show today, actually. He points out that the browser is governed by Amazon's privacy policies, which are pretty upfront, saying, quote, we receive and store any information you enter on our website or give us in any other way. And they say, if you don't like it, exit the browser and do not install, use, or access Amazon Silk. In other words, we're going to keep track of everything you do, and that's the way it is. If you don't like it, don't use this browser.
Well, that's pretty transparent.
But I don't.
And do you think Google doesn't?
No, of course Google does.
Been doing it for years.
Yeah, of course Google has its own browser, Chrome. Why? Well, guess why.
And I doubt that Apple is throwing much data away about what you do. And
we now understand why Apple made Safari. It wasn't because we didn't have a good experience.
Well, it's a different society. 20 years ago, if someone had a case where they said, "Look, I have a right to have all these companies erase their data about me." We'd probably say, oh, yeah, that makes sense. You know, if it's your personal data, they have no right to it. We just had that right to be forgotten case, and people are looking at it going, you don't have that right. You know, if you're on the internet, you're in a public space, you don't have the right to tell companies to get rid of the data that you left behind. And it just shows you we will accept this. As long as you give me something shiny, Gmail, a better shopping experience, I will take invasion of privacy as long as I don't think it's too invasive.
Well,
and that two-part shifts. What's too invasive will shift over the years.
I mean, it's funny because we have this conversation on nearly every Twit. No matter who the panelists are, there's this clear sense that privacy does no longer exist. That Scott McNeely was right. He said privacy's over. There is no privacy. Get over it. And yet there is also this strong feeling we should try to fight for some semblance of privacy. And I don't know what the answer is. I generally come down on the side of, I don't care. So what if Google or Amazon knows everything I do? What's the harm in that?
Depends on what kind of porn you watch.
You know what? Everybody watches porn. So what?
I only watch Christian porn.
Okay, good man. I'm sorry, not everybody, but many of I guess I think we're going to head to an age.
Oh,
thanks
I
to
am sure Father has done his research into the sinfulness of mankind.
You have to research to know. I mean, seriously, this is groundbreaking stuff.
This is so bad. I don't want to go this way. But I do have to point out that one of the Facebook world, the post-Facebook world, notice we have a president who admitted to inhaling. That the standards are changing. You're not going to be able to elect a president who hasn't smoked pot or hasn't surfed porn. You're not going to be able to hire an employee who hasn't got pictures of him drinking heavily on Facebook, because what will become apparent is everybody, with the exception of Father Robert Bowser,
I don't do any of that.
Everybody does this. And so is that a bad thing? Maybe, Dvorak always brings up the boogeyman of insurance companies finding out I'm eating too many donuts and refusing to insure me. I don't really worry about that so much. But
well, not only that, but that we under Obamacare, that's a pre-existing condition anyway.
So I'm safe. I'm protected. Thank you, President Obama.
So. Well, I think that part of it is the idea that, you know, we haven't seen it yet. The insurance company, I don't think this is necessarily a boogeyman thing. I think it's something to sort of be concerned about.
Well, seriously. I think that if that starts happening, then in fact, legislation will probably do something about
it. It could. But it certainly could come
Let's
into
not assume
play.
There's going to be harm until it happens.
I agree. That's fair enough. I think it's just anticipating, you know, that this could affect you getting a job.
Well, and the point is that it is too late. I mean, it's like I think it's already. Jerry, is that your position? It's already too late.
I think that the time to have done this was 20 years ago when I wrote some columns about it and nobody paid a damn bit of attention to it.
You've given up. What was the threat 20 years ago?
This.
So this early days of the internet. You could see it coming.
Well, before the internet.
Sure.
Remember back in 1980, what made me famous, if you can use that word, was that I said that by the year 2000, anybody in Western civilization would be able to get the answer to any question that actually had an answer.
That's true.
And
it happened.
Lo and behold, it happened by 1995, didn't it?
Thanks to Google.
Nicely done.
And Western civilization changed in about 1990, when the wall came down.
Mm-hmm.
So it's now, except for China and North Korea and a few places that don't have any internet things, anybody in the world can get almost any answer to almost any question that has an answer. Well, questions like, when was Leo born and what did he have for dinner last night, are questions that have an answer.
Anybody
who wants to know what you had for dinner last night could find out if they really wanted to know it.
Should we worry, though, and this is the right to be forgotten in Europe, but should we worry if somebody queries, you know, how long was Leo's jail term for that rape conviction and they find an incorrect answer, then what is my recourse? I mean, not all the information's accurate, Jerry, as we well know.
I understand thoroughly.
We cover big data all the time on TWiT, on my network show.
Well, I think that there are.
And it's always, you know, the nightmare scenario is when big data goes wrong, because those correlations that
it
draws
does, inevitably.
Isn't always right.
Yes.
So now what? Is it too
late?
We're screwed.
It's not too late. I think it's just expectations.
No, that's what legislatures are for, is to determine who is responsible when false data is disseminated. It is still, again, you can still collect for being libeled, you know.
But see, that's
now,
a problem.
It's true that many of the people who libel you don't have enough money to make it worth going after them.
But Jerry, that's the problem with false data and big data, because you're not disseminating any falsehoods. Big data is just based on disparate sets of information that are put through some sort of database. So there is no individual, there's no corporation that's making the assumption. They're just giving you a percentage of possibility based on the information it has.
Well, I'm not harmed by that. I am harmed if it comes up and says that I served 5 years for poisoning children when I was 35 years old or something.
Right. Well, what about this?
That's just a libelous statement.
I'll give you an example.
That people my age and with my background have a 4% probability of having molested a kid at some point in time, there's nothing I can do about that. That may or may not be a true statement.
Right.
But if it says that I did it, that's an accusation and a lie, and I can do something about that.
Great quote in our chat room from Bruce Schneier, Web7 says, Bruce Schneier in 2006 wrote, quote, patterns we leave behind will be brought back to implicate us by whatever authority has now been focused upon our once private and innocent acts. We lose our individuality because everything we do is observable and recordable. I mean, I understand both sides of this argument. I really do. I've decided, because I'm too lazy to do anything else, just to buy the Amazon phone. you know, because it's cool and I want it. Now, what about the judge in Ottawa who has the Supreme Court, actually it wasn't in Ottawa, the Supreme Court of the British Columbia was ruling on a case in which a company, Equistech, sued because another company they claimed was making programs, data link, that stole Equistech's ideas and designs and in effect violated their patents. The judge has ruled, yes, in fact, this company, Datalink, did steal your designs and has informed Google that it must pull down all links to Datalink's site, not just in Canada, but they have to kill all the search results on all their servers worldwide. Now, the judge obviously doesn't have jurisdiction worldwide, but this is the first time I've ever heard of a national court telling Google, you've got to get all the addresses, all the references out, not just Google CA. The judge wrote, websites can be generated automatically, resulting in an endless game of whack-a-mole with the plaintiffs identifying new URLs and Google deleting them. So as a result, Google must kill all data link search results worldwide. Not just any particular website, but anytime you search for Google, on Google for data link.
So that's not just
now,
silly.
That was Canadian, did you say?
Yes.
So that won't affect the United States.
It will because
they're saying that it could be on all domains, not just Google.ca.
Yeah. And I don't know how they have this, could have this jurisdiction. Google said if we follow this order, it will put us in conflict with laws in other countries. Google is most likely going to appeal, and Michael Geist, who is a really excellent constitutional scholar in Canada, said it seems likely that this will be thrown out. He writes, based on earlier Canadian cross-border internet cases, the global order will probably be struck down. Quote, this judge has decided she's going to decide for the rest of the world. He says, adding that it appears that the judge, seeing the size and power of Google, may have decided that, quote, judges need powers that are equally large if they're going to deal with it.
I think I'd rather see Google have some of it than depends on the judge. I don't find judges always act in my interest.
That's right. I just I think we are in a really interesting and it's a conundrum. I don't know what the answer is, and I want that phone, so I'm just going to buy it.
Well, actually, look, all of this discussion leads to what you said, which is, it's cool, I want it. And it doesn't matter how much we talk about
this.
We're
children.
Eventually, people will say, it's cool, I want it.
Ooh, shiny.
It's new.
Yeah, a lot of what we're talking about is kind of future-proofing against scenarios in the future that worry us. And, ultimately, I think that the thing is just to If you want it and you understand, you know, what you're giving up to do it, then by all means. And I think our job is just to, you know, push them for more transparency and
I guess I'm looking to Jerry for you're the wise, the elder, the wise leader. You're the chief of our tribe, Jerry.
Well,
wise Sachem, please advise us.
I think that Jason is absolutely right. It is our job to warn people that there are consequences to having all the pretty things that you want. But I must say that having been the guy who did that for about 30 years and seeing how much result I got from doing it, I'm not dead sure it's going to do Jason much more good than it did me.
It's no fun being Paul Revere. Is that what you're saying?
Does this, by the way, lead us into net neutrality?
Us not into evil, but deliver us from net neutrality. Oh. We'll talk about that when we come back. Thank you, Jerry.
I'll just keep carrying the flag, Jerry.
I know Jerry's take on this, but I'm going to give him a chance to say it and everybody else, too. We got lots to talk about. This is a great show. So nice to have Jerry Pournelle here. I mean it when I say he is the elder of our tribe, our fearless leader. Also, Father Robert Ballasair, great to have you, host of This Week in Enterprise Tech, Know-How and Coding 101, the digital Jesuit. And we got him because the Pope doesn't. That's all I'm going to say. Sorry, Francis. He's mine. And no. Anytime Francis wants you, he can have you. Because you know what? He's great.
Yep.
He's great.
He may not be alive much longer, but...
Really? Is he ill?
No, he took on the mafia.
Oh, dear. That's why we love him.
Exactly. He took on the mafia just after he discarded the bulletproof Pope mobile.
No! I know. Don't! This is a fearless man of God, and you got to love him. And I'm talking about you.
I wouldn't take on the mafia.
No. Well, no.
In Father Bollinger's case and mine, yes, we've got to love him. But
Well, that's my point. Here I am.
It's contractual.
An atheist headed straight for damnation, and I still love him. Jason Hyron is also here from Louisville, Kentucky, our show. It's great to have you, Jason. He's the guy who got me elected president of the internet, by the way.
That's right.
So props to him.
Well done.
Yeah, well done, Jason. That is and I'm just going to tell you, Alexis Ohanian, who's running as mayor of the internet, the president, Trump's mayor. I just want to say, Alexis, although
absolutely,
given that Alexis founded Reddit, he certainly has a certain claim to that.
He's the mayor of a big city on the internet.
Yeah. I'll give him the biggest city on
there
the internet.
Go.
There you go.
There you go.
Our show today brought to you by Stamps.com. One thing I know you don't want to do is head to the post office to wait in line to buy stamps. But you don't have to. The post office approves this message. Stamps.com turns your PC or your Mac into your personal post office. You can buy and print official U.S. postage. Use it with your computer and your printer. You do not need special inks. You do not need a postage meter. You can print anything from some stamps to shipping labels. You can print right on the envelope. In fact, it really looks pro to do that, by the way. I always know when I get mailings from people who use Stamps.com because their fulfillment looks great. It looks great. Because, you know, your logo, you get the return address printed on there, the address. It's just slick as heck. And, you by the way, you're still giving business to the post office. Mailman still comes to your door, picks up the mail. In fact, the post office loves you so much, they'll give you discounts you can't even get at the post office. I just drive by the post. I love the post office. Don't get me wrong. I am a big fan of the U.S. Postal Service. What they do is amazing. I am a huge fan. I go by whenever I go by the post office, I wave, but I do not stop. I go home to my office and I print. And by the way, what I do not love is the postage meter companies. Postage Meter Inc. is 100 times more expensive than Inkjet Inc., which is by itself 100 times more expensive than blood. Plus, postage meter companies will charge you to reset processing fees. If the stamps go up, you got to pay them to change the rates. With Stamps.com, it's simple. The rate changes automatically. You don't even have to worry about it. They always have the right rates. I'm going to get you a USB scale so you always have exactly the right postage. If you are selling on eBay or Etsy, Amazon, PayPal, it'll automatically take the information from the website, print out the mailing label, send out an email if you're doing, confirmed mail. If it's international, they'll fill out the customs forms automatically. You don't have to handwrite a single thing. Stamps.com. Go to Stamps.com. Click the microphone in the upper right-hand corner and enter the offer code TWIT, and we've got a really good deal for you. $55 in free postage to use over the first few months of your Stamps.com account. That USB scale I mentioned, you get an activity, free activity kit and 30 days free of Stamps.com. This is a $110 bonus offer. Go to Stamps.com, click the microphone in the right-hand corner, and use the offer code TWIT. Stamps.com. Don't get me wrong, because I love the United States Postal Service. And actually, this is the best thing that ever happened to the U.S. Postal Service, frankly. All right, let's see here. We can move on from privacy.
I think so.
Net neutrality,
besides,
huh, Jerry?
We're watching everyone, so it's all good.
Google, all right, here's one. Let's stay with privacy for a little bit. Google bought Nest, which is the thermostat company. They also make a smoke alarm that talks to you. And then Nest has now bought Dropcam for more than $500 million, $555 million. Dropcam, we use Dropcams. We have 6 Dropcams. If you go to twit.tv/Dropcams, you can see views of the studio. Always live from a lot of different places. It's a Wi-Fi enabled camera, quite good quality. Does that make you nervous that Google's buying a camera company? Are they gonna? You know, one of the things that Dropcam does that's very interesting is there we are. There's a little delay, but if I start waving, you'll see us. Yeah. One of the things that Dropcam does is they store the, if you pay, you have to subscribe, but they'll store all the video. You can search it. You can scroll through it. So it's got a server component along with it. Online storage, $99 a year to save a week's worth of video at a time. Nest now, Nest can see you. The drop cam can see you. Nest is saying that we bought, not Google, but we bought them. And like Nest customer data, this is the quote, drop cam will come under Nest's privacy policy, which says data will not be shared with anyone, including Google. Which I think this is smart. Without a customer's permission. Nest has a paid-for business model. Ads are not a part of our strategy. And acquiring DropCam will apply that same policy to DropCam as well. I'm actually thrilled. I think DropCam's a great company.
And it makes sense. Because Nest is a home automation company. They make the thermostat. They make the smoke detector. This is a natural part of any automation solution.
And it's very smart of Google to say, we're going to set this up as a subsidiary that has its own rules and doesn't share data back with us. So
yeah, that is smart.
Yeah. At least it's sensitive to the issue.
I'm going with Jerry on the inevitability of all these kinds of things. But still, you know, I agree that not playing devil's advocate any longer on some of the privacy stuff. I agree. It's a smart move, and it's going to be an important part. I think this is an important aspect of, you know, the smart home. And if Google wants to do that and go, you know, full out with it, then, you know, and obviously they do with the Nest purchase, then it's got to be part of the equation, too. And so I think it's a smart buy. I think getting them before somebody else did, you know, helps Google, helps
yeah.
Nest.
Yeah.
I want to see Amazon buy a company like this and combine it with Firefly so they could tell you what you can buy from around your house. We noticed you don't have a tablet.
You know, you like that flatware? We could get you more.
That's a really ugly dress.
Your kid just dropped a plate. Let's order some more.
Yeah. When you call that tech support number, you know, and you tell them, they say, okay, we need you to restart your computer. And you say, okay, it's done now. And they say, oh, no, we just saw you on your camera.
You didn't move. You didn't
liar.
Move.
No. Didn't move. Liar. you know, home automation, Google I.O. is coming up this week. We will cover it live, by the way. And I think home automation, it was clearly a big part of Apple's announcement at its developer conference a couple of weeks ago. And it's clearly going to be a big part of Google's announcement.
It will be. I think wearables may steal, you know, a lot of the oxygen out of the air at Google I.O. this week. Everything seems to be leading up to the fact that they're going to try to go big on wearables. They know iWatch is coming, and we'll
last,
probably talk about
kind of last chance. Is that what you're saying? Last chance.
It is. This is their chance to try to put a stake in the ground and you know, get people to realize that they're in this game, too, and that they're, you know, going to be big into it. And so I think we're going to see a lot of wearables. We have somebody there, Connor Forrest, one of our reporters, is going to be there all week. And, you know, of course, CNET and ZDNet will be covering it as well. Wearables is going to be huge this week at Google Live.
You know, somebody, Father, in the chat room actually made a very good point. Given that Google will have a camera in their bedroom, now those Viagra ads have new meaning.
Chad was saying, we notice you're low on toilet paper.
Our camera in your bathroom noticed that the toilet paper.
You were having a little trouble last night, and we have a solution.
Combine that with Amazon drones, and now they can just drop cameras everywhere.
Our sharer cam noticed that you need some more shampoo.
From now on, you're stuck in the toilet on the toilet with no toilet paper. You just go, a little help, Google, a little help here, and a few minutes later.
We noticed you have nothing to read when you're on the toilet.
With a roll of toilet paper, yes.
See, there is a benefit to this. I'm just saying.
And meanwhile, the gizmo has looked into your bedroom cabinet drawer and decided that you're going to need to take a trip to the drugstore because you're running out of those things.
Exactly.
So it can automatically order it for you. Like, it sees, once you notice that my toilet paper is down, you know, to a certain number of rolls, just automatically, you know, ship it to me.
How many years have we been talking about that? I guess it goes back to Comdex, the refrigerator that orders more milk automatically for you because it sees you're out. I don't know if we're ready, if the world's ready for that. Let's talk wearables because you brought it up, Jason. I think it's a very interesting subject. Apple has never said it's doing an iWatch. Never said it. And yet the entire world is gearing up for Apple to do an iWatch.
How long were we waiting for a tablet, though, right? How many years did we conjecture and talk about it? At least 2 years, pretty heavily, before the iPad was released. Don't you agree?
And then, you know, your analogy is actually pretty apt, because 10 years before the iPad, Microsoft was pushing tablets. 10 years before the iWatch, Microsoft's been pushing this. Yep. Remember the Spot Watch?
Spot Watch. I had one. It was this big. It was that big.
Of course, that was long enough ago that people still wore watches. I don't know if the word. Well, let me see. I see a watch. Okay, one person, two watches. Yeah.
Yeah, it's
Google
funny.
Google Glass. Get out of here.
It's CES. Jerry's got one. At dinner at CES, one of the dinners at CES that I was at, I was sitting next to the CEO of Pebble, really smart, great guy. And he said to me, our biggest competitor isn't Sony or Samsung, who've been doing a lot of smartwatches too and really trying to compete with them. He said, our biggest competitor is people not wearing watches.
Right.
And I think he's exactly right. Exactly right.
I've tried every one. In fact, I'm wearing a Galaxy Gear 2. I'm going to review it on, they don't call it Galaxy, Samsung Gear 2. I'm going to review it on Before You Buy on Tuesday. And I've tried them all. The Basis, the Fitbit, the Flex, the Fuel Band, every one of them. And they're, none of them quite there. The Pebble. Chad's got my Pebble. And there's two categories, two ways to go. One is health and one is phone extension. The Pebble's all phone extension. Fitbit's all health. I can imagine Apple might unify the two. But I think this is a tough category. Jared, what do you think from your perspective? I mean, you've watched categories come and go. It's pretty clear now tech companies have gotten to the point where they're just trying to predict what's next because they want to be there before we get there, right?
Well, fold in the nanotech people who could lithograph your watch onto your wrist if they wanted to.
How close are we to something like that?
Whether they could make it waterproof and stay on there, I'm not so sure. But it would be powered by your body chemistry heat, and they could do that now.
Really?
It would cost a bit. Yeah, it would cost something right now. But if they thought there was a big market for them, it'd probably. I will tell you that within 20 years, you'll be able to buy that as an app for your phone.
It strikes me that wearables, that's part of the challenge, is that anything we talk about, whether it's glass, a watch, they're cumbersome, they're uncomfortable. We want the functionality, but we don't want to give up we don't want to look like dorks when we don't want to have to wear stuff.
That's why I only use a sundial. That thing is cool.
I don't know. Maybe if it's subcutaneous and shines through my skin, then I could keep it dry.
Now, the special sauce.
Niven has been writing stories in which, without there being part of the plot, they're just there. People have their watches tattooed on their wrists for 30 years.
Yeah, that seems sensible. Wearables, clearly we would love to be more intimately connected. The thing is, I think we can't forget, is that the computer has basically become the device in your pocket. I mean, we are pretty intimately connected with our computer now. It's more personal than it ever was.
The most personal computer ever released. I mean, it is.
So are these companies trying to move us too fast in their desperation to find out what's next? Are they overthinking this?
No, I think they're trying to make technology. The whole thing about wearables is making technology disappear into the background more, making technology become more human.
That makes sense.
Making it become less of you staring at a screen all the time. And I think that's an admirable goal. I just think the execution has never been right yet.
Right.
And, hopefully between Google and, its wearable API and the stuff it's going to talk about next week, and then Apple, most likely in the fall when we, could hear about iWatch if the product is ready yet, then, hopefully we're a step closer. It's still going to be pretty rudimentary, but I think we're ready for the next step. I think all of us are ready. Certainly all of us are ready. We'll see if sort of the more of the masses are ready to sort of try some of these things and see if they can, take some of this technology to make it more fade into the background and be more human and less of people staring at little pieces of screens or bigger screens all
Jason,
day.
Jason, I'm sorry. I don't want to interrupt.
Go!
Okay, I'm sorry. We had to get that out.
Excellent. 1-1.
Yeah, the Spaniards have loved that. Where's the vuvuzela? Yeah.
Come on. What? That sounds not good at all. That's bad.
Amazon drones are going to take you out, dude.
That was my best material, too. They had to score right in the middle of my best material.
I'm really sorry, Jason.
Rewind. But Android, okay, so Google has already announced Android Wear. Motorola said, yeah, we're going to do a watch. LG, I think that the thinking is LG is going to have a watch at I.O. this week.
Yeah.
And it'll probably be given to everybody who's at I.O. But I got to say, this stuff is crap. I cannot get excited about it. I've worn every watch. Every time I wear a watch, it's disappointing.
Well, doesn't it feel like a step backwards?
Yes.
I've removed stuff from my wrist. I don't want to clamp something back on.
But Jerry remembers that's how tablets were when Microsoft was pitching them to us.
True.
Way back when. Actually, Jerry, you liked your, you always talk about your HP tablet.
I liked mine.
Yeah. You were the only one, Jerry.
I didn't like it.
My handwriting, which it didn't understand yours.
Jerry's told this story before, but how did that happen?
Well, I went to Moscow in the late 80s when it was still the Soviet Union. And Stepan Panovich of Paragraph was writing the handwriting recognition software that eventually went into the Microsoft tablets. And he didn't have any examples of American handwriting. So I took out my logbook and I showed him.
And you still do that. You log everything
do
you
it.
Do. Yeah, wow.
So that's what paper looks like.
He Xeroxed about 50 pages of that. So if it's going to understand anybody's handwriting, it's going to understand mine.
I love it.
So that's why I like them. I want to point out something to you that you seem to have forgotten.
Uh-oh.
Moore's Law is inexorable.
Yes.
The microprobe people are up to something like a couple of thousand channels of information on a probe to your head.
Wow.
They have a doubling time of under 7 years, and I suspect that's going to go down more and more. When you get to the point where it's 10 to the 10th channels of information that they can do unobtrusively with maybe one little plump in your head, why do you need to wear anything? Why doesn't the computer just talk to your brain?
So is this all a rehearsal for jacking in?
Something of that sort.
I'm sorry.
You know, I have been writing about
rehearsing that for years.
Where you think at the computer for many years, and sitting there in that nanotech conference last year, I come to the conclusion that by gum gollies, it's coming. I probably won't live to see it, but you may.
I love that idea. I do. I want that to happen. And every science fiction novel that I love the most has some feature of
Good.
That kind
of... You would love Star Swarm, then.
Now, this is your young adult one, right?
Yes. It's young adult characters. The story is probably adult, but yes.
I want to read that.
And, of course, Oath of Fealty was an early attempt at what happens if you have a human-man-machine interface like that that works. So
the fact that so much science fiction talks about that, does that say this is what we secretly hope and desire? I mean, you know more intimately than anybody the process of science fiction. When you start seeing something just turn up all the time in science fiction, what does that mean?
It means it's selling. The general populace likes stories that have that in it.
Yeah.
Okay. That's fair.
Samuel Johnson said it very well. No man ever wrote, if no one but a blockhead ever wrote for anything except money.
It's too arduous.
7 years of making a living at it, I guarantee you that's the way I feel about it.
Isn't that great? I love it. And yet, I do feel like, I don't want to get too airy fairy, but somebody used the word zeitgeist, that there's something in the air that you start just to see. And maybe it is that feedback loop between an audience and a writer where the audience says, yeah, we like that, more of that. And so there's definitely this desire for a human machine interface.
But until the 90s, there was no, it was just fiction.
Just pure
Nobody
fiction.
Realistically expected it to happen very soon. when we wrote Oath of Fealty in the 70s, 80s, everybody, you know, I had people thinking at their machines, and everybody thought that was kind of goofy.
Yeah.
Nowadays, nobody thinks that's goofy. They think it isn't here yet, but they don't think it's goofy. And when you're talking about 10 to the 10th channels of information going from your head to outside and outside to into your head, that you are now talking about a fair amount of capability of simulating your brain in a computer.
Yeah.
See, I don't think I can think at you and you understand it. I think you and I, each, all 4 billion of us on this earth, have our own internal language. But I think we are getting to the point where a computer can read and write Leo, so to speak. And it can read and write Jerry, and then it can have those two talk to each other within it, if you see what I'm getting
at.
Yeah, so, you know, it's funny.
That would look like telepathy.
It would look like telepathy. It wouldn't be telepathy, but it would look like telepathy. It would require the hardware intervention. On the other hand, I point out to you something I said to the nanotech conference a couple of weeks ago. They say, what's going to be going on in 2034? Well, one thing that's going to be going on in 2034 is that whatever you're carrying around with you for a telephone will be more powerful than the most powerful computer on this earth right now. And that includes Watson and Big Blue.
Imagine that.
And it will have terabytes of information on it. On it, internal to it, as well as connected to the cloud. But you'll have Watson in your pocket.
Yeah.
And you'll be the most formidable competitor on Jeopardy there ever was, except that the other people will have them too.
I love that. I go the other way with the zeitgeist. When I was growing up, the dream of sci-fi was this idea of being connected to a massive network where you could instantly recall up any information that you needed whatsoever.
We're living it.
We're there right now.
That's what I said would happen in 1980. Yeah.
Exactly. But I mean, if we look at the trend right now, the trend is not to crazy powerful, more powerful machines in our pockets. We've already got that. The trend is going back to the old mainframe days where we are now, with ubiquitous connectivity, able to tap into a central repository of data, a central repository of computing power.
It doesn't matter. It's going to be free. It's inevitable. Moore's law is inexorable, and it's going to continue.
Well, even Moore said it wasn't going to continue forever.
Well, at some point, you know, you get to the quantum level.
You understand Moore's law had to do with how many transistors you could get on a chip. And that's not really what it is. But the information technology has for years been basically that every 2 years it either gets twice as powerful or half as expensive, and sometimes both.
Right.
And it's been going that way, and it has very little to do with the number of chips you can put the number of transistors you can put on a chip. A lot of other things happened.
So Moore's law, in terms of the,
it's more a spiritual thing. It's an idea.
Yeah, the principle of Moore's law rather than the sort of actual chip numbers.
Exactly. You know, I would just say Moore's law as a shorthand.
Right.
Yeah, I would have been skeptical. It's funny. I would have been skeptical about the interface thing a little bit more. If I hadn't, over the past few weeks, I've been working on this story. It's about some of the early people working in early days at Apple. It's a long form story that's coming out next month.
Oh, good. I can't wait. That's great.
Yeah, it's fun stuff. But the cool thing that the realization that I've come to is talking to them about some of the early work they did and the things they were actually working on and the problems they were trying to solve and accomplish. And then comparing with what we're doing now, you know, 35 years later, 30, almost 40 years later, it's just staggering how far we've come. I mean, I look at this stuff and I'm so blown away, and talking to, you know, even people that were working on technology in the 70s, and they're blown away, and the stuff they're working on, you know, they're even so excited about. And, you know, we're looking at how far we've come in such a, what is relatively short period of time. It really is quite staggering. And so because of that, if we can come that far and what we're doing is essentially accelerating and building upon what we're doing. I don't know. I think there's a lot of things that we're going to solve in the next 30 to 40 years that, you know, we're going to blow us away.
And absolutely. That's why I don't care about giving them my personal information. It's worth it because we're going to get all this cool stuff.
Because it's shiny.
Yeah. Although I have to say, the more I talk to people and I see more and more people talking about this, the more I worry about artificial intelligence and the machines taking over. But that's a conversation for another time. Go ahead,
yes,
Jerry.
Artificial intelligence is not a natural outcome of the growth of the sun. Somebody has to want that to happen. If you were talking about building self-replicating machines that are then allowed to evolve on Lamarckian rather than Mendelian evolution.
But aren't we kind of doing that right now?
No.
Elon Musk says and I think he's not alone because we've interviewed a number of people on Triangulation and elsewhere, says he's very concerned that we are creating machines that are smarter than us.
Well, it hasn't happened, and it could be. I like to think we're still smart enough not to do that.
Yeah.
If we can figure out a way not to, yeah.
Also, well, it's not that hard not to better.
Do. Jeff Hawkins.
Sure has to stay plugged into the wall.
yeah, right. No batteries.
No batteries.
And no collecting power from the inner where the air.
More than that, self-replicating machinery is a fairly dangerous thing to do.
That's what Jeff Hawkins said to me. That's exactly what he said. He said, you can do anything you want, just don't let it replicate.
We're back to the gray goo.
Yeah. NASA had this conference.
Jerry, you're breaking up. Can I? We're gonna call you right back. I'm gonna do an ad. We're gonna call Jerry back and get him on while we do that. Hold that thought. Our show brought to you by Squarespace.com, the best place to go for your next website. Squarespace is both hosting, the best hosting out there, and software to give you an experience and your users an experience that is second to none. For one thing, you can't bring a Squarespace site down. So you're never going to disappoint your users when they come to visit you. You will be there. You'll look great on every screen, whether they come on a 30-inch 4K display or a 4-inch iPhone. Your site will automatically size itself. It's not a separate mobile site. It will look great. Squarespace, it has the best engineering, the best people, the best designers, and they're all there for one purpose, to give you a great-looking website, whether it's your blog, whether it's your business, whether it's your portfolio. I want you to go to squarespace.com. Click the Get Started button. You could start using Squarespace right now. Choose from 25 designer templates. You might say, well, 25, that's not enough. But let me tell you, as soon as you go to the template, you'll see other sites that are using it. Each is unique, is its own special little snowflake, because Squarespace gives you the tools, without knowing coding, to create a unique site that fits your needs. Add your social media. Use their blog or metric apps to post. The metric app's great because it lets you, this guy does beautiful furniture. So this is a portfolio. What a gorgeous looking site. Visit Squarespace.com. You can see how people are using Squarespace right now. Real sites, real people doing amazing things. Try it for 2 weeks. You do not need to give them a credit card. If you visit Squarespace.com, just click the Get Started button. You don't have to give them any personal information, just the name of your site, your email address, and a password, and you're going. You can import all the content from your existing site, too, so you can really get a sense of what it looks like. And as you change, here's a book, Love Letters from New Orleans. As you change the content, the templates, rather, the content stays the same. They've separated it beautifully. $8 a month for the basic plan, and that includes a free domain name when you register for a year. Full e-commerce at $24 a month. Unlimited bandwidth, so you never have to worry about becoming a hit. All you have to do is create great content, and the world will beat a path to your door. Squarespace, hosting, software, great support and service from their office there in New York City, 24/7. I'm just a fan. I want you to try it today. Again, you don't need to use our offer code to try it. It's just go to squarespace.com and click the Get Started button. But if you decide to buy, then use the offer code TWIT. You'll get 10% off on your new account. Squarespace.com. We've called Jerry back. Looks good. I think maybe
Hello. He
just had a bandwidth degradation or something. I don't know what happened there. Anyway, you're saying something about NASA.
Well, they had a conference at Pajaro Dunes. It was run by the University of Santa Clara. And it was on self-replicating machinery in space. The notion was you send something up to space, and it makes a factory, and the factory makes robots, and robots make more factories, and factories make more robots. Could you do that? Then you can either harvest factories or harvest robots. And can you do that? And with the technology of the time, you couldn't do it. I'm not sure. I don't think you can now either. You can't quite close that loop. But one of the things you observed was if you could do it, then how many years would it take before every star in the universe, which is billions, of course, will have been visited? And that turns out to be only a few million years.
Wow.
Which is a pretty short period of time given the number of years since the universe was formed. It's kind of like Fermi's question, where are they?
Right.
Well, where are the probes?
Right.
Why is none? And Minsky came up with this. He said, maybe that's the one rule in the galactic civilization. That, if you build a self-replicating machine and send it out, we come in and blow your planet up.
That is the one thing thou shalt not do.
Yeah, no. Marvin and I were roommates at that conference, and we had a lot of fun.
Oh, that must.
That.
I'd like to have been a fly on the wall for that. Wow.
And then we send Amazon at them, and it's all over.
Thou shalt not build a phone that can gather all the information in the universe, or we're going to have to destroy your planet. So, well, we'll see. Google I.O. is coming up. We're going to cover their keynote live. Starts at 9 a.m. Actually, Mike Elgin has the details on the week ahead. Mike, when is that event? Pause.
Coming up this week, Google's big event, Google I.O., kicks off Wednesday, June 25th. Both Jason and I will be at the event. Leo's going to host a special Tech News Today Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, to cover the keynote live. Also, we're expecting Microsoft to roll out its first ever Android phone, the next generation Nokia X, on Tuesday, June 24th. That's what's coming up this week. Back to you, Leo.
Thank you, Mike. Mike Elgin, news director and host of Tech News Tonight, Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 1700 UTC for your morning tech news on Twit. Wait a minute. Should I? Do we need to? Are they going to call it back? Are they going to call it back? I don't see it. It seems like it's time to say go. Nine minutes left, and we're winning 2-1. Not that I care about football. Not that I care. You know what? Let's see if you missed anything this week on Twit.
This is it.
You missed a lot. Let's take a look.
Previously on Twit. Twit Live Specials.
Because they know the Z depth, how far away the head is, they can tell the cherub head is way too small given its distance. That's brilliant.
So are they going to be able to size your fedora?
Hold your foot in front of your phone. We'll get you the right shoe size.
Tech News Today.
I do think we're going to see a lot of smartwatches everywhere. We're going to see a lot of companies trying to get into this market. We're going to see a lot of junk.
This Week in Law.
In spite of using these free licenses, I get permission requests all the time. The issue isn't licenses. There's no license that's going to solve the problem. The issue is permission cultures.
Triangulation.
Joining me right now is the author of this book, Console Wars, Blake J. Harris. And as he says, the battle that shaped a generation.
At least in the first half, dubbed as a David and Goliath story with Sega trying to slay this beast that 5 years earlier, Nintendo was their own David and Goliath story.
Twit. Rack him up.
This is something from my childhood.
Crank.
Oh, my God.
Oh! That's, we have Jeff Neal's, our newest employee, apparently beating up on Chad. I think you are the two youngest people in the building, though, right?
Possibly, yeah. That or the interns.
Yeah, aside from the interns.
Yeah.
What? Did you slug him back?
Well, not. We have extra footage that was compiled by Anthony, so.
A crank.
Oh!
That's a good hit.
That's like. That's like Ali Norton.
What
is like
supposed to go in Manila?
These might. You're going to hit. Okay.
I don't think Jeff likes you, Chad.
Yeah, he's
Chad's wearing a helmet. By the way, that's a helmet from the Los Angeles Tactical Squad.
Bulletproof.
Bulletproof helmet, but he hit you in the jaw.
Not quite soccer bumper proof. Yeah.
Unbelievable. Don't miss the Giz Whiz. That's a great show. Chad Johnson and, of course, our good friend Dick DiBartolo, you're going to do that on Thursday starting this
soon.
Week? Next week?
I'm not sure.
We don't know yet.
We don't know yet. Who knows?
What? Oh, I'm sorry.
That's super secret.
Shh. First rule about Gizwiz is you do not talk about Gizwiz. Sorry. So, Patrick Leahy and Congresswoman Matsui have introduced landmark net neutrality legislation. I'm opening the door here for Jerry Pournelle. As you know, the Federal Communications Commission is debating this whole thing, and they've been told by the courts that they don't have the jurisdiction to ensure net neutrality. So a lot of us are calling for them to enforce Section 2 of the Telecommunications Act, which would say declare basically broadband providers to be telecommunications companies and regulatable by the FCC. But maybe the solution is this bill, the Online Competition and Consumer Choice Act, which would do the most important thing, the thing we're most worried that the FCC will approve, paid prioritization deals. The internet service providers would go to companies like Netflix or Google or YouTube or Twit and say, if you would like to have high speed internet delivered to our customers, you would give us extra money so we could have a faster connection. And they want to make this illegal. The Online Competition and Consumer Choice Act would prevent the creation, they say, of a two-tiered internet system. Al Franken, his co-sponsor, Henry Waxman of California, Anna Eshoo of California, all original co-sponsors. Waxman and Eshoo both have constituencies in Silicon Valley, so they obviously have some interest in this.
Waxman's not in Silicon Valley.
Oh, he's
Valley.
In L.A. He's your
in
guy.
Los Angeles.
That's right. Yeah, Eshoo is in Silicon Valley. So what do you think? Is this the right way to go? Okay, I'll let you hold on, Jerry. We'll let Jason say something, and then, Jerry, you can weigh in.
So good, because I'm not necessarily going to take a side here. I'm just going to set the scene a little bit into this net neutrality thing is really starting to line up kind of like healthcare and immigration, in that most of us agree in the principles of what needs to happen. The thing that we can't agree on is how do we get there? Because when and how do we accomplish the goals? In the case of net neutrality, is the goal being sort of the free and open internet, right? Or at least a sort of free, fair, open internet. But the problem is in enacting legislation or legislating it and trying to legislate those solutions, there are going to be winners and there are going to be losers and there are going to be unintended consequences. And that's what everybody's, I think, scared of and can't necessarily see what the results of all of those things are going to be. And that's why we can't come to consensus about what we should do, more not so much what we should do, but how we should do it, how we accomplish it. And that's the challenge, you know, with net neutrality. And I think that it's one of those things. I don't know. This doesn't feel any closer than anything else that we've talked about over the last couple of years.
You know, one of the things that I've seen over the last couple of weeks talking about net neutrality is essentially what it's boiling down for the telcos is they'd like us to trust them. We saw this when AT&T put forward their proposal to buy Dish, DirecTV, where they basically told the FCC, look, we promise. I mean, we're not going to give you any actual written promises, but we promise that this is going to be good for the consumer.
Don't hold us to it.
Yeah, we won't tell you how, but this is going to be good.
Yeah.
And
trust us.
Yeah, they've got no store. They've got no reservoir of trust.
No.
All right, Jerry, you and I agree on one thing. A deep abiding fear of government regulation on the internet. The internet has grown without government interference, and my fear is that if we don't protect it, that the telecoms and the broadband providers are going to screw us.
So basically,
how do we solve this?
If I don't require, I get to subsidize your porn downloads, is that basically it? You don't have to pay extra because you're using up more.
I'm already paying. I pay for my internet access. Yes, so do you. But why should
the
porn
point.
Company?
I mean, you want to solve the problem, I'll give it to you quickly.
Yes.
Enforce the Sherman Antitrust Act.
Against?
against all of these dang companies. There is not, you should not have any companies that buying each other out at the levels that they are at.
So the and I'd agree with you, the lack of competition is what put us in this position.
The lack of competition is the only thing you have to worry about. So, and if you give the government a monopoly, it's still a bloody monopoly. Yeah,
that's a good point too.
Yep.
So you're worried about something that isn't a problem yet and doesn't look like it's going to be, because bandwidth keeps getting developed a lot faster than the ability to use it to begin with. I mean, I used to get net slowdowns a heck of a lot more a few years ago than I do now. You just had to turn me off and recall me because we got a slowdown on Skype.
Right.
But it was all free, and it happened quickly. I just don't see what it is that you want. Why is it you want to give the FCC geniuses the power to tell you what you can and can't have?
No, I've actually come around to the idea that enforcing Section 2 is probably a bad idea, because that just gives the FCC a lot more to regulate. But do you think this bill is a good idea?
I think that the bill is a horrible idea. What I would like to see is a revision of the Sherman Antitrust Act that makes it very clear that we are not going to have companies that are too big to fail.
Right.
Yeah, Phil, because it's exactly true. And when I think any legislation almost always in the U.S., the U.S. is much more on the side of businesses, especially big businesses, than it is on consumers. Typically, so any legislation, my concern is any legislation that gets enacted, the unintended consequences is that it helps the Comcasts and the Verizons and the, you know, Time Warners of the world.
Well, and if Comcast merges with Time Warner, they come preciously close to being a monopoly.
Now, can I just point out one little thing?
Unintended consequence that it keeps people from entering into the competitive field. Adam Smith said it a very long time ago. Whenever two capitalists get together, they plot to see how government can keep somebody else from competing with the two of them.
Fair enough. True.
You have enough regulations, and nobody can start a startup because he has to have 9 compliance officers on staff before he can make a product.
Yeah.
And he ain't got that. Capitalists don't want to pay for compliance officers, so you don't get startups. I mean, it's really all of this stuff you're talking about, net neutrality, is really a conspiracy against startups.
Oh,
I'm gonna have to think about that. Yeah.
Hold on, I love that quote.
All right,
I'm not convinced of that, Jerry. I mean, I do agree if you have
it will be an inevitable so-called unintended consequence. What I'm telling you is it isn't unintended.
Right.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Supreme Court has done something for us in the battle against patent trolls. On Thursday morning, they ruled unanimously to dismiss a patent awarded to an Australian company for business software.
Right.
Yeah, hoorah. The court wrote, "We conclude that the method claims, which merely require generic computer implementation, fail to transform that abstract idea into a patent-eligible invention." Justice Clarence Thomas writing the majority opinion, a unanimous opinion. Now, this is important because software patents, the door was open to software patents when the court ruled that a computer program used to vulcanize rubber was patentable, first time ever, because it controlled a machine. And they said, well, that is an implementation because it's controlling a machine. That did open the door for software patents. And of course, we see a lot of very generic patents that control no physical machine. They're things like patenting the slide to unlock, things that would in the past have been copyrighted or trademarked, but not patented. So
double click,
yeah,
that's ridiculous.
Yeah, so single click patent. Yeah,
buy with one click. That's not a patentable idea.
So
it didn't take any bloody genius to figure that one out.
No,
it's not. No. Patent trolls are not over because, of course, as often happens with a decision like this, now the lower courts are going to have to decide, well, what is a generic computer implementation? What is what is a physical implementation, you know, and that's going to, there's going to be a lot of question marks. Judge Sotomayor wrote a concurring opinion that said no business method should ever be patentable. That's getting a little closer to the idea. But the question is still open about whether software itself could be patented. But this is a big, I think, a good step in the right direction. I don't know what the upshot will be with the USPTO, but I thought we'd mention that.
Yeah, but on the other side, you still have the USPTO handing out a copyright for Pi in January of this year.
Not Apple Pi?
No, just Pi.
P-I.
The symbol, like, they were able to get a copyright on Pi, the symbol for Pi, because obviously there's no prior art for that.
Oh, my God.
You still have Oracle, who is they've got a new wind in their lawsuit against Google's use of their
APIs.
APIs. So this is one little ruling.
I'm no fan.
But I don't know. I don't see it propagating.
Uh-oh. Poor Jerry. I think Comcast decided that he shouldn't be able to use Skype
anymore. I think that was the nanotech.
conspiracy between the two.
Let's take a break. And when we come back, we hope Jerry will as well. They just tied it up?
I think they just equalized it.
There's only 30 seconds left in the game. They tied it up.
Oh, I think they tied it up.
There's only 30 seconds left in the game. That's a terrible thing. Actually, I'm glad because we have many Portuguese viewers, and this way everybody wins.
No.
Right.
So now you suck on the vuvuzela?
Yeah. Can I inhale?
No.
Doesn't really produce a sound.
It doesn't. No.
Our show today. Brought to you. Thank God there's backup. Can we back up this game?
Oh, my.
Carbonite online backup, whether you have one computer at home or several at your business. The worst thing that could happen is you lose data. I had a guy call me. He said, my hard drive fell off a table on the radio show today. My hard drive fell off a table, and now I can't get into it. He said, I've priced it. It's going to cost me thousands of dollars to get my data off this drive. I said, did you have a backup? He said, it was the backup. I said, but if it's the only copy, it's not a backup. Calm. Just because you put stuff on your backup drive does not mean you have a backup. If you have one copy of your data, you're going to lose your data eventually. Carbonite does it exactly right. If you're a business and you're letting Jerry in the stockroom back up your computers whenever he remembers to do it, and he's backing them up on a hard drive he keeps in the stockroom, what if the whole thing burns down? You've lost everything, including Jerry. Why don't you use Carbonite Online Backup? Then you're not dependent on any employee. Once you install Carbonite on your network or on your individual computer, it starts backing up. And for the next year, you can go to sleep. You can take it easy. You can relax because Carbonite's backing up all your files. You can access those files anytime. Just log on to your Carbonite account on any computer or use their free apps. You'll see your stuff. These are very affordable, flat rate plans, no matter how many computers you have, no matter where they're located. It's very affordable. You only pay once a year, and you don't have to really think about it. Start your free trial today at Carbonite.com. We're going to get you 2 weeks, no credit card required. You can use the offer code TWIT, and you'll get 2 free bonus months when you buy, and that is a good deal. Please, peace of mind protection awaits at Carbonite.com. We thank them so much for their support of This Week in Tech. So it's a tie. So Portugal goes on, and we go on.
Well, no, because they've, well, no.
No? What happens now?
So they've got 1 point. Ghana has 1 point.
And we have
Germany has
four points.
We have 4 points.
So we're going to have to. You wanted it. You wanted us to beat Germany to go in.
Well, we have to have at least tie. We have to have tie.
Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to hurt you. This is going to be an exciting week. We've got Google I.O. coming up. I think we're going to see some interesting things. Maybe some smartwatches. We've got. That's it. Pretty much, that's all.
I.O. is the big. I.O. is sucking the air out of the room.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, we were going to talk about the Surface Pro. I knew there was something I didn't want to. So the Microsoft Surface Pro 3 is now available.
Mm-hmm.
Can I go to Microsoft Store and buy it and have it tomorrow?
You should be able to.
It's not a delay, not a long line. They didn't sell out stock.
Well, there were people waiting in line overnight.
So here, people.
Many.
Several.
Dozens.
Nationwide, dozens.
Adored by dozens.
we make fun. We mock. But actually, I think this is you've played with it a little bit.
I have played with it. It's a nice machine.
Yeah. You're using an Acer S7.
I'm using an Acer S7.
I use that too. I love it.
Which kind of leads me to is what I would take over a Surface 3. I like the Surface 3. If I was going to use a Windows tablet, that's definitely the tablet I would use, but I want my laptop.
There was a question, and I don't know if they fixed this. There were some really...
What have you got there, Father?
This is an Acer S7.
It. Highly recommend it, Jerry. I know you're looking for your... Who is this for, your niece, your granddaughter?
Well, I did that, but I'm also... It's time to replace my old ThinkPad.
I think the ThinkPads are still pretty darn good. In fact, the Carbon X1 Touch is
but this
amazing.
Is a four-year-old one.
Right.
Uh-huh.
What do you like, Jason?
For a tablet?
Or for, Windows.
He doesn't like tablets. He's like me.
I just cannot. I wrote this article, you know, when the iPad first came out. The iPad's only good for two things, you know, reading and Scrabble.
It's really good for Scrabble, though, I got to say.
It is excellent for Scrabble.
I can remember when I was playing Words with Friends on the iPhone, the iPad hadn't come out yet, and I dreamed of having 10 inches. I've been dreaming about that a lot. But and the idea of being able to play Scrabble... and it is really the Words with Friends machine.
Amazing. It's amazing. But basically, you can boil that down to, like, you know, gaming and viewing content, right? That's like the two things tablets are good for.
I kind of thought that all along. I know people say, I can create content, blah, 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 but...
I still feel that way. I just can't. I'm sort of with Robert. Like, give me a laptop. Give me a really good laptop, thin, light, long battery life. And, you know, and then I've got a great phone and I'm happy camper.
I do feel like we are. So who was it said we are in the post PC era where the phone is really 90% of the computing I do.
Well, amazing. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, my phone has a big enough screen where that's my tablet. I don't feel like I need a tablet in addition to my phone. And when I want to go one step up, it's my laptop.
Exactly.
It's not to another
tablet. I don't
need
that in-between device. By the way, I just want to point out that when Bezos talked about the Amazon Fire Phone, he did not once mention making phone calls.
Right. We don't do that. Who makes a phone call anymore?
It says phone in the name, but it isn't really a big part of it, right? Or maybe it's just something you don't have to mention. Yeah, well, of course, you can make phone calls, not that you'd ever want to. So let's get back to the Surface. The other thing I was a little worried about, and I don't know if you know, Robert, but we were talking about this on Windows Weekly. Both Paul and Mary Jo had the pre-release Surface Pro 3s that they got from Microsoft at the announcement, and they've had weird power problems. It would lose power. It would lose the time of day. You'd have to reset the machine. And there was some question about if Microsoft was going to fix this with a patch when the Surface Pro 3 came out, if it would be forced when you download it. Did they fix it? What is the status? Maybe somebody in the chat room knows if you bought a Surface Pro 3.
Well, the machines that they got, even though they say, these are preview machines, they were part of the manufacturing batch. They didn't manufacture 1,000 prototypes and hand them out to the press. So those same machines are the ones that you're going to buy in the store. I wasn't able to duplicate the power problem because I didn't have it long enough.
Right.
But I have read about it. And
it's fairly serious,
I'm not convinced that it's a software problem. I think it might actually be a hardware problem.
Right. See, that was part of the question. They believe that the software fix could fix it. So we don't know. But it's something you should probably ask before you run out.
That's a matter of some concern. I need two things. I need a production laptop. And frankly, an Air would work very well for what I'm doing on that. I need something I can write on when I'm away. But I also need something I can sit at the breakfast table and use OneNote to go through the newspapers, both online and the paper in my hands.
That's a perfect OneNote.
That's what the Surface machine.
It's made for OneNote. Because you take out the pen and you press the button and one that launches, it is like it would be a great dedicated OneNote sheet. By the way, Mary Jo Foley did tweet that there was a firmware update that when you open the Surface Pro 3 and turn it on, immediately applied, and they say does fix that power problem.
Huh? All right.
So apparently apparently they have fixed it. Given that, if they fix that problem, then Jerry, and given what you want to do, I think the Surface Pro 3 is exactly what you want.
Understand, I'm going to get a laptop, too, and that Acer looked interesting.
Love the Acer. That's what Mary Jo bought.
Yeah. She did a lot of research. She finally picked up one of these things that lasts less than 3 pounds, gets about 10 hours of battery life, crazy, crazy fast, and, of course, touchscreen.
If you can buy both, Jerry, that sounds like a great combination.
Yeah.
Well, or, I mean, given what I do, I need both a laptop and a tablet. Yeah. I did manage to do a couple of Comdexes with just that compact HP laptop, and it worked pretty good. And I could go in the press room and connect it to the internet with its built-in Ethernet and file stories from it. But I've found, by and large, that tablets, few of them have a keyboard that I can write fast on.
Yeah, and I think you'd feel the same way with this touch or type. I guess you only do the type cover now. Yeah. Although, try the Acer keyboard because, like a lot of but like a lot of modern keyboards, it has a very short throw, and you may find I actually have trouble typing with it. And if that's the case, then you should stick with your Lenovo and the Carbon X1.
Oh, but you have the last version. You have the first generation.
I know. I don't have this new one.
This is the new one.
Is it a little bit better?
Yeah.
It's still a short throw.
It's short throw, but it clicks a little bit.
All right.
You feel the click. Yeah.
I'll give it a try. I'm probably going to just end up with another ThinkPad. I've had good experience with them.
They're excellent. Jerry, it is always such a pleasure to have you on. Every time we have you on, I think, gosh, why don't we have Jerry on every show? You're just great. I thank you for being here.
Thank you.
What do you want to plug? JerryPornell.com. Buy his books on Amazon.
Yeah, JerryPornell.com, yes. And if you're interested in man-machine interfaces, look up Star Swarm and Oath of Fealty. You'll love them both.
I'm going to read them both. I'm a big fan of Jerry's writing, including Lucifer's Hammer, which is a great, gosh, is that a great book. I've obviously got some catching up to do.
Oh, I got some news on that.
What's
that?
Just real
quick. Nevin and I are doing we don't know if it'll be a novelette or a novella, maybe up to 50,000 words, as to what happened to the surfer in Lucifer's Hammer after it's he survived, and what happens to him in the couple of years that are following.
He was surfing the tidal wave caused by the asteroid.
And we have figured a way whereby he survives this, and maybe he survives it. You'll have to read it. You'll love it. We're working on it now.
How could he survive? John's pointing out he surfs right into the wall of an apartment building.
Well, but apartment buildings do have doors.
Whoa!
Even on the eighth floor.
Don't spoil it for me. I just bought Lucifer's Hammer on Audible.
So good. And Moten God's Eye, which is phenomenal. Yeah. So many great books. We thank you so much for your writing, Jerry. And just for your, being here, for being our sachem.
Yeah.
Thank you for being here, Jerry. Thank you, Jason Heiner, TechRepublic.com. Always a pleasure to talk to you. Are you excited about Google I.O.? You can't wait to get your hands on that watch?
No.
Not
really.
At all.
No, not at all. I won't be there. Actually, I'll be in Detroit next week at an event that that Ford holds there. It's kind of an event about innovation and some of the stuff that they're doing. But it's really not just about Ford. It's barely about Ford. It's more about kind of global innovation and the future of the ways innovation is going to impact society. And so it's a good event that they do every year around the same time as Google I.O., interestingly.
Awesome.
So, very cool.
Awesome. Thank you, Father Robert, for driving up. We really appreciate it. Always a pleasure to have you. And thank you also for hosting Twit in 2 weeks, because I'm going to be in Hawaii.
Thank you for reminding me.
I will be. You've forgotten. So it's a good thing I mentioned. July 6th, be here, okay?
July 6th.
And we want to thank our great studio audience, Andreo Ibanez, who bought a lovely bowl of chili. I see on your Twitter feed, he brought a bunch of people across the street. And engineers from Google and Google-related companies who are here from Spain for Google I.O.
Oh,
now
this is Google
you understand.
Spain.
This is
wonderful.
The six people who work for Google Spain. No, I think there's more. Great to have you guys. Everybody in the audience, a lovely studio audience today. No, standing room only. What are you waving there? You saying hi? Where are you from?
Massachusetts, actually.
Oh, well, that doesn't count. Does Massachusetts have a team in the World Cup? I don't think so. All right. No, just teasing. Anyway, thank you all for being here. We do Twit on Sunday afternoons, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 2200 UTC. You can watch live at twit.tv or live.twit.tv or get the on-demand audio and video after the fact. We put it out as quickly as we can, a couple hours after each show. Best thing to do is subscribe. You'll get it automatically on your smartphone or your tablet or your computer. There are apps for all the platforms you can get, so you get the latest version of Twit. Thanks for being here. What did we tied?
We did tie.
That's okay. Congratulations to our friends in Portugal.
Okay.
They're okay. They're good. Hey, we would have knocked them out, and I would have felt bad because we have friends in Portugal. Now we can knock them out without them watching. In private, so to speak. Put your vuvuzela aside. Thanks, everybody. Another Twit is in the can.